From the Danker studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, an exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. I'm Roger McDonough. Today on the program, we'll have Political Cornflakes with Salt Lake Tribune Washington correspondent Thomas Burr, taking a look in particular at the reaction of Utah's members of Congress to the decision by the Supreme Court to let lower courts' rulings on same-sex marriage stand. Plus, the Salt Lake City Police Department is going to participate in a multi-year external study to look at how it handles cases of sexual assault. We'll find out more. That and your summary of the day's top local headlines coming up just ahead on The Rundown here on KCPW. First up, though, this world news from the BBC. And welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Coming up just ahead on the show, a conversation with Salt Lake Tribune Washington correspondent Thomas Burr for our weekly recap from the nation's capital, Political Cornflakes. But first up, we have these headlines. The Salt Lake City Police Department is set to participate in a multi-year external study to evaluate how it handles cases of sexual assault. On Friday, Police Chief Chris Burbank announced the department's participation in the study, which is being conducted by two national organizations, the Police Executive Research Forum, or PERF, and the Women's Law Project. The study will review current SLCPD policies and practices in responding to sexual assault and will provide recommendations on how these practices might be improved, both in Utah and around the country.
When I was in contact with the executive director of that organization, I said, absolutely, Salt Lake City wants to be one of the four agencies in the entire country that is going to be evaluated. And not only does Salt Lake City want to be a part of that, but I want the process here to be completely open and transparent, and anything you find good, bad, or indifferent, we will make public, with the eye to improve the process throughout the nation.
The announcement comes after recent discussions by the Salt Lake City Council over whether or not the police department should be required to process all so-called Code R rape kits in cases of sexual assault. Some council members, including Kyle Amalfa, had suggested that the number of untested rape kits held by the Salt Lake City Police Department was unacceptable. In an interview with The Rundown last month, Holly Mullen, executive director of the Salt Lake-based Rape Recovery Center, also endorsed the idea of testing all kits, saying that doing so could help to catch repeat offenders or serial rapists.
If we take every kit and test them and enter what we know into this national database they have called CODIS, C-O-D-I-S, basically a tool that all law enforcement agencies can use across states to, you know, look for cold cases, to look for repeat offenders, to look for serial rapists, there are cities now that have made rape kit testing, quick rape kit testing, mandatory, have fed the information into the big database, and have gotten incredible hits on serial rapists and cold cases, and even homicides that began with rape and escalated in the process to a homicide.
But in Friday's press conference, Chief Burbank said that taking the decision out of the hands of police detectives can lead to an unnecessary waste of taxpayer resources.
Anytime we arrest somebody in Salt Lake for sexual assault, their DNA is taken, a sample at jail, and is compared against the database. And so if we then send a kit that has that same individual's DNA, in fact, it's not entered into CODIS. It's not compared because they would have already had a sample through the arrest. And so it is nothing but expense to either the agency submitting it to the crime lab, or it's expense in the fact that it creates backlog or more cases that are potentially unnecessary in the system.
The new study the Salt Lake City Police Department announced it was signing on to on Friday is being led by the Police Executive Research Forum, an organization dedicated to improving practices and policies in police departments. The study will also be conducted in three as-of-yet unnamed communities around the country, and their work will culminate in a national summit and a comprehensive guidebook outlining best practices in investigating sexual assault. It's too early to say whether or not mandatory processing of rape kits will be among their recommendations. The U.S. Department of Education has approved a one-year extension of Utah's waiver from requirements of the federal No Child Left Behind law. Utah was among six states granted waivers on Thursday that exempt schools from the adequate yearly progress requirements of the law. Without the waiver, Utah schools would have been subject to sanctions unless every student in the state scored proficiently on statewide tests in 2014. Sanctions included diverting funding for at-risk students, faculty and administrative changes, and the potential reopening of low-performing public schools as charter schools. 41 states hold waivers granting flexibility from No Child Left Behind. The Utah Board of Education voted in August to reapply for the renewal of the waiver, which allows the state to develop and implement its own accountability system. The U.S. Supreme Court says that same-sex marriage can go ahead in Idaho. The court issued an order Friday that appears to remove the last legal obstacle keeping gay and lesbian couples from getting married in the conservative state. The Federal Appeals Court in San Francisco on Tuesday declared gay marriage bans illegal in Idaho and Nevada. Justice Anthony Kennedy temporarily blocked same-sex weddings in Idaho a day after the state asked for a delay. Idaho officials said county clerks would be forced to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples almost immediately without the higher court's intervention. Kennedy offered no explanation for his order, but indicated it would not be lasting. The court issued no explanation for its order Friday either. Industrialist John Huntsman Sr. has been honored for his philanthropy. He was awarded the Simon Prize for Philanthropic Leadership on Thursday during the Philanthropy Roundtable's annual meeting in Salt Lake City. The private nonpartisan organization, which administers the prize at the request of the William E. Simon Foundation, works itself to promote philanthropy. The 77-year-old Huntsman, founder and principal benefactor of the Huntsman Cancer Institute in Salt Lake City, received a $250,000 prize. Of that, the Deseret News reports he donated $200,000 to the Huntsman Cancer Institute and $25,000 each to the YWCA and St. Vincent de Paul Dining Hall in Salt Lake City. William Simon, namesake of the prize, served as Treasury Secretary under Presidents Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford. And finally today, President Barack Obama is sparing from future development nearly 350,000 acres of land within the San Gabriel Mountains northeast of Los Angeles. Obama exercised his authority under the Federal Antiquities Act to turn the area into a national monument. He made the announcement Friday at a park within the mountains in San Dimas, California. Supporters say the move will provide recreational opportunities for millions of people, particularly minorities and children who live in Los Angeles County. The White House says the county is one of the most disadvantaged areas in terms of access to open space. But local officials worry about potential use restrictions. Some California lawmakers also faulted Obama for acting without congressional input. Since taking office, Obama has preserved more than 3 million acres of public lands. No hints yet at whether or not he will act on a Greater Canyonlands National Monument in Utah. That does it for our summary of the day's top local headlines. I'm Roger McDonough. This is The Rundown. Stay with us. The Supreme Court made big news this week on the topic of same-sex marriage. So how did Utah's members of Congress react? I posed that question to Thomas Burr, Washington correspondent for the Salt Lake Tribune and author of Political Cornflakes, a daily online roundup of Utah politics.
Well, they're obviously not pleased. You know, our members of Congress, at least our Republican members of Congress, are, against same-sex marriage and believe marriage to be between a man and a woman. Senator Orrin Hatch commented saying that, you know, this was only essentially the first test since the court struck down the Defense of Marriage Act, and that others will come up again. So his message is, you know, don't lose hope. The fight isn't over. Congressman Chris Stewart said, you know, he was disappointed. Senator Mike Lee, though, said it was wrong for unelected, unaccountable judges to be making these rulings about big issues instead of the, you know, duly elected, elected leaders. Lee, mind you, was a Supreme Court clerk, so his comments were a little surprising in some ways. Right. I saw many a commenter pointing out that that's exactly what courts are for, to decide if laws are constitutional or not. I should note here that the court really technically didn't decide anything other than not to take up the cases. So they kind of made a decision not to make a decision that was a decision, if that makes any sense.
It does make sense. It's a little confusing, but isn't, I was going to ask that question. Isn't there not taking the case sort of an endorsement of the lower court's decisions?
Yeah, exactly. And that's, all the coverage focused on the idea that the justices, you know, didn't want to take up a case where there was no opposition. All the circuit courts had ruled the same way, and until they get a circuit court that rules the other way, there was no reason for them to take it up. Usually they want to take up a split when the 10th Circuit says something and the 9th Circuit says something different. That's when the Supreme Court usually weighs in. So in some ways, I didn't necessarily see this coming, but it makes sense when you look back at it.
Right. Yeah, there's a certain logic to it. And meanwhile, same-sex marriage is the law of the land here in Utah. It's legal. I've seen that on the filing forms, there is now spouse and spouse as opposed to husband and wife.
That's interesting. And yeah, and it's now 30 states in the District of Columbia where same-sex marriage is legal now, which is something that, you know, 10 years ago would have been unfathomable.
Right. Maybe some critical mass. I guess we'll have to, as always, wait and see in this world. Thomas, in other news, Congressman Jason Chaffetz is hopping mad again about the Secret Service. What's going on now?
Do you remember when the Secret Service was, you know, like secret? We should go back to that. anyway, so we learned last week, really, you shouldn't tick off Jason Chaffetz. He cost, cost the director of Secret Service her job because of the White House fence jumper. This time, Chaffetz is digging into that whole prostitution scandal that happened in Cartagena, Colombia, a year or so ago. And it sounds like the news is pretty interesting. It apparently appears that one of the members of President Obama's advance team may have hired a prostitute while in Colombia and spent the night in his hotel room, but that was never reported. The Washington Post also noted that the White House may have pressured investigators to delay a final report on that investigation until after the election was over, instead of having it come out and embarrass the president beforehand. The White House is obviously pushing back on that and saying they didn't do anything to stop the report. One of these things you have to see that Chaffetz is, of course, auditioning for being the chairman of the Oversight Committee. And when you smell blood, you go for it. And he certainly sees an opportunity when it comes to the Secret Service.
Right. Hey, a question that I have on this, Thomas, is the White House actually in charge of the actions of the Secret Service? It seems like the Secret Service is there to protect the president. Who's in charge of the Secret Service? Is it the White House?
It's actually kind of complicated. So obviously, the Secret Service is part of the Department of Homeland. It used to be under the Department of Treasury. They moved it when they created the Department of Homeland Security. So the Secret Service is under that department, Jay Johnson, the secretary. And so they respond to the Homeland Security Secretary, who then, of course, reports to the president. But there's like a different mix there, for example. So, the Secret Service can't tell the president he can't go somewhere. They can advise him that maybe there's a security risk or something like that. But the president can go, where he wants to, and the Secret Service just has to figure that out. So technically, he's not giving them direct orders of, don't put somebody here or, I don't want that many people around me or anything like that. But what Chaffetz is seeing here is this is still the administration. It's still Obama's administration where these problems are. And if it's directly at the White House, so it's easier to stick.
All right. The complaint is that you're not protecting yourself well enough, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
But a scandal is a scandal if you happen to be looking for one. Finally today, Mitt Romney has been crisscrossing the country, stumping for a variety of candidates, but President Obama doesn't seem to be doing the same. Why is that?
Well, CBS News this week called Romney a political MVP because he's so in demand with the Republican candidates. He was in Utah this week, for example, stumping for Mia Love, and he's been all over the country for other folks. So since we don't know who's running for president from the Republican side in 2016, Mitt Romney's kind of still that standard bearer, and people on that side still love him. They spent millions and millions of dollars promoting that Romney brand. And candidates all over want to, hug him on stage and get donors to see him, and hopefully they'll throw all their money at him. Right. Obama's on the other side because he's the incumbent. He's had to make some, tough choices. Some of his decisions people have been critical about. His approval rating has definitely slid. He actually has to govern, and therefore, people don't place the same esteem on him that they might a couple of years ago. Whereas Mitt Romney, can stay off to the sidelines and say, I told you so, or right. If I was there, it wouldn't be like this, where you're not actually judging what his policies would have done.
So this is sort of kind of the nature of politics. Second term presidents are generally less popular, right?
Yeah, exactly. Incumbents, when you have to, that's why endorsements are always interesting on that side. But, I'm sure that there are some Democrats in more liberal areas are fine to have Obama come, but certainly he's going nowhere near like South Dakota or West Virginia or Colorado.
Right, where he could be a liability. And meanwhile, Mitt Romney is kind of this surrogate candidate. What's going to happen, though, when he's been going around and being the superstar and somebody has to step into his place and take on that nomination? Do you think that they're going to struggle with, coming out from under his shadow?
Yeah, no, I think there's plenty of candidates who still can. We haven't figured out who could, but I mean, for example, if former Florida Governor Jeb Bush, you know, jumped into the race, then, you know, he's an instant name. People know who he is. You know, he would have no problem escaping Romney's shadow. Some of the other people have had, you know, some problems. Chris Christie, Scott Walker, Paul Ryan could jump out and will be there, could be there pretty quickly as a home name that everyone recognizes. So Romney's going to be the guy for a while, but his star is going to start to dim as soon as one of these guys, you know, actually jumps into the race. And, you know, it could be wild. Jeb Bush may not make a decision until way late in the game because he's already, you know, got the name that he doesn't have to educate people.
Right. The power of the legacy name. Yeah. And that announcement carries with it a big bump in ratings, at least until somebody else throws their name in the ring.
Yeah, and Mitt Romney will still be somewhat of a kingmaker. You know, they're all going to want his endorsement. They're all going to want him to appear, and he's going to, you know, he's going to be the belle of the ball for a little while, even when the race starts. But at some point, it's not going to be his name on the buses or the posters or the yard signs.
Well, and we're left to wonder right now whose it will be. Thomas Burr is a Washington correspondent for the Salt Lake Tribune and author of Political Cornflakes, a daily online roundup of Utah politics. He joins us weekly for this discussion, and you can find a link at our website, kcpw.org. Thomas, thanks as always for joining us today.
Thanks, Roger.
I'm Roger McDonough. This is The Rundown. We'll be right back. Thanks again for tuning into The Rundown this afternoon. Our show today was produced by yours truly with additional help from Ross Chambliss, Ryan Cunningham, and news intern Mycel Spotted Elk. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tune in each weekday at 5 for an exploration of local news, events, and issues that matter to you on The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned next for the Utah Business Report and Marketplace.